are with Star Trek Adventures Intergalactic, the intro episode. I am Devin, the equivalent of a storyteller, and to my left we have X playing Y.
Nicole playing Ivik Dorel, who is a Cardassian and was part of the Maquis before all of this, but is now the chief medical officer aboard the USS Voyager.
Perfect. And
Kevin playing Karthas, who is the captain.
Peter Astanax Quick, who's a chief security officer.
And Ian as Takis, a Denubulan chief engineer and operations manager.
Okay, so I'm going to have to do some of the bulk of the talking for this first part here just to establish the premise. Star Trek Adventures is the new RPG for playing Star Trek. It's fairly storytelling driven, like there's a lot of manipulating the events surrounding the events in a meta context for the players to make the show, to make the each session flow more like the shows do by changing the narrative, changing drama, upping stakes, and taking care of stuff in the background, as well as having characters being competent in the foreground. The default type of character you make are Starfleet personnel who are equivalent in skill to any of the characters from any of the shows that were main characters. So Kirk, Scotty, and Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, Picard, Data, Riker, Geordi, Sisko, Kira, Bashir, Garrick, and Janeway, Chakotay, Tom Paris, Bolana, and whoever came from the nightmare ship that was Enterprise. You know?
I mean, Devin, no one is as perfect as Tom Paris.
I know, right?
The writers told us that.
Yes. So your default main character is a competent Starfleet officer who knows what they're doing. You don't have to grind your way up. You don't have to earn that or anything. Your characters have already earned it. The game is built to tell the kind of stories that we've been told for like 40, 50 years by this point, not to simulate some sort of sci-fi combat engine. In fact, Star Trek Adventures is very well equipped for making combat the last possible action and isn't really meant to come up that much unless it's necessary. After reading Decipher and FASS's Star Trek systems, this one is a lot smoother, a lot faster, and a lot less finicky. You don't have starship templates that have hundreds of boxes on them that you have to check off health levels. Oh, I can show you this.
Boy,
it's not good.
Fun.
Yes, I know it sounds fun to you, Peter, but you're a robot. Your pale yellow skin and your albino eyes.
Data?
Yeah, Data.
Okay, I'm like, what?
So, yeah, Star Trek Adventures is built to replicate the feel of the show, not a sci-fi universe. To that end, we, after some back and forth and basically discussing our favorite bits of Star Trek, decided that for our game, instead of doing a completely new ship, we would do the series Star Trek Voyager. It was the very last in the... It was one of the last in the TNG era shows, which basically started with Next Generation, continued to DS9, and ended with Voyager. Enterprise was also part of the TNG era in the sense that it was made with the same people and production values, but it's a prequel, so Voyager is really the last of the timeline moving forward, and after Voyager ended, we got 17 years of doing before TOS, the original series stuff. And as of this recording, in November 2017, it has not stopped. We are still getting pre-the original series Trek. It just won't... they'll never move forward. The future is too scary. So... there are several reasons why we picked Star Trek Voyager. Voyager had 7 seasons. It had a nice ensemble cast that focused on a lot of different people, just like TNG did. It had a dynamic kind of plot where they're lost in the Delta Quadrant and they have limited resources and they have crews that are from Starfleet and the Maquis and they have to intermingle. And they had a lot of wacky ideas and a lot of potential for fun races and exploring the unknown on this mission to get home. The actual show wasn't that great. This is objective fact 20 years later. You can't argue this. It was a pretty bad show.
But this it was fantastic.
It was not the fault of the writers. It was not the fault of the actors or the people doing set design or the music people. It was basically the showrunners had long run out of ideas and were basically repurposing TNG era scripts and ideas and just put it into a new show and shackling how the actors could like evolve their characters and stuff. Voyager had a complicated run. And a lot of episodes that didn't make sense and were basically sci-fi magic. But among that, Voyager had a lot of really fun concept episodes that if you look at it a certain way, or, you know, with 20 years of hindsight, you came back to it, you could probably spruce up and make it to a really fun kind of change-up. And a lot of the moral implications and prime directive conversations and ethics, like, the key that made us think of Voyager was in our conversations a lot of us had, where we were talking about an episode of Voyager where their pilot, Tom Paris, is put in solitary confinement for 30 days with no human contact, which is something here in 2017 is an act of torture that is not recommended to be done anywhere to any human ever, because that's horrifically bad. So, of course, we were shit-talking Voyager for doing that and making Janeway out to be some sort of tyrannical baby-eating monster. From that
conversation, she's never gone on the record saying she doesn't eat babies.
I mean, she's definitely eaten a few babies. Not Kate Mulgrew. Kate Mulgrew's a gem. I love Kate Mulgrew. She's the best. But Janeway is the living devil. So, the conversation basically went to, okay, well, what if you were the captain? What if Tom Paris committed an act of terrorism using your ship resources and fought back and stuff? What do you do with him? He's your best pilot. He literally is. In the show, he is literally, objectively speaking, your best pilot. What do? You can't not punish him just because he's your best pilot. You can't put him in the brig for 70 years. You can't execute him. You can't do corporal punishment. How do you solve it? And from there was born a really interesting series of questions about other episodes of Voyager. Tuvix! And the ethics that were never fully explored. Or the episode that began season 2, the 37s, where the question was, what if you found a paradise world where a lot of the Voyager crew who didn't give a fuck about Earth wanted to stay instead of traveling through the Delta Quadrant? What are the ethics of that? What about the aliens? What about the people on board who never been to Earth but wanted to get back to the Alpha Quadrant and were screwed over by too many people staying behind? These sort of questions led us to want to redo Voyager. And I thought it was an excellent jumping point because it essentially gives us 164 episodes of pre-established adventure modules that we could build actual sessions out of instead of combing for ideas or making stuff up on the fly. And I like the Voyager idea, where you don't have resources and you have to kind of make do with what you got, and there's not a starbase that'll fix you up every once in a while, and your crewmates can get a little squirrely because there's nowhere to put them if they get weird. So, with that in mind, we had the pretense for the game. And moving forward from that, we had to set up a few ground rules. We're going to use episodes from the show and remix them to make decisions on them with our own characters. We weren't going to play Chakotay and Janeway and shit. We were going to make original characters that were going to try and follow Starfleet principles. So the first thing was, we're using Voyager material, but we're not shackling ourselves to what Voyager did. The second part is, we want to make this an optimistic, sci-fi, thoughtful game, so the characters need to act like Starfleet officers, or people trying to follow the Starfleet ideal. We didn't want to turn this into Prince of the Universe, where it could just so easily turn. I mean, you're so far from Federation space, no one would know. You became God Kings and plated Voyager in gold.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many primitive races over here with Lord over.
Yeah, we didn't want to turn this into a Prince of the Universe scenario where we turn into crazy tyrant gods.
Yep.
And from there, people built their characters, and basically we went through the Voyager crew list, and I have a really extensive knowledge of Voyager just from rewatching it like 17 times. Nicole and I are constantly rewatching TNG, DS9, and Voyager on a loop, always. So I know the beats of basically all of it, and we decided who of the original cast we could kill off and get rid of. To that end, Janeway's definitely gone, Tuvok is gone, Harry Kim is gone, and B'Elanna is demoted to engineering and not the chief engineer, because oh my god. So with that in mind, we'll now talk about the characters that have replaced those long-standing characters. We have Nicole, Kevin, Peter, and Ian playing in this game, and they all built brand new characters. I'm going to start with Ian.
Okay.
All right. So while I do that, all right, and Ian, I will give the spotlight to you.
Okay. So I'm playing Takis, Denobulan. Anyway, Denobulan.
Dr. Phlox's race.
Yeah. He's a chief. He's the chief engineer and operations manager of the ship,
the Voyager,
and he's a veteran officer of Starfleet, serving 60 years in Starfleet. He plans on retiring after about 65-ish years in Starfleet. Puts him at, he's currently 90 years old. And after retiring, he's going to join the family business of a trader among different planets. Yeah.
Like, what are those defining moments in your career, perhaps?
Oh, okay. So defining moments in my career. So as, so I, the backstory on my character is his Denobulan family are a bunch of traders who go planet to planet. And
traders with a D, not an I-A-T.
Yes, yes.
There we go.
Exactly. And but they all believe strongly in Starfleet, so they all send their kids or young adults to go serve in Starfleet for...
if they can make it.
Yeah, exactly. For a length of time. Some of them serve
as
5-10 years only. Some of them, like my character, you know, does a full 90, even some do 150 years, because Denobulans can live up to 280 years. So some of them serve a very long time in Starfleet. So my career event is he was mentored by another member of his family, as is their kind of tradition. And in this game, I actually have a mentee who I'm mentoring. My second career event is while on my mentor's ship, we were with Kevin's character. I forget his name off the top of my head.
Corthus.
And we encountered a alien race that we were unable to communicate with. My mentor believed them to be hostile. Corthus believed them to be friendly, which he then convinced my character to help him. So my character learnt their language and realized they were friendly, and yeah, brokered a bit of a kind of peace deal with Corthus's help. Yeah, that's my character.
Pretty good. And you're the chief engineer of Voyager now.
Yeah.
And specifically, you're apprenticing B'Elanna and Joe Carey. Joe Carey was the original chief of engineering, and B'Elanna was the one on the show, because you don't have enough crack engineers, so you do chief of operations on the bridge, and also split your time between training them and also being the chief of engineering.
Yes, because my character doesn't need to sleep, so it's very easy for him to kind of just multitask and power through.
Speaking of Joe Carey, I think we should maybe mention the change of the name, right?
Oh, his name's not changed. You're
no.
thinking of a different dude.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay, so my character is Tanax Quek. He's a Klingon. He's a lieutenant commander, and he serves as a second officer, chief security officer, and chief tactical officer, basically replacing Tuvok on the Starship Voyager. Yeah, he comes from the Klingon War of Quonos. His mother was a Starfleet officer, and he joined the academy as a cultural exchange sort of thing. He went to become a security. And one of his defining moments in the career was the Battle of Wolf 359. Well, yeah, he served there as pretty much every ship got wiped out.
It did not go well.
Yeah. He helped as many people escape as possible, took one of the last shuttles out. And his second defining moment is that he crash landed following that battle, and he had to spend a year on a jungle planet surviving before he
with
was
with the rest of the people, right?
It took a fucking year to find you guys?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jesus.
I think that
it was an uninhabited jungle planet, I mean.
I want to make it something notable rather than for that
planet probably had some weird thing that didn't find your signal until you guys got to a thing or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or by chance they found you a year later.
Yeah.
Space is big.
Yeah, you need to be something big enough for him to get special commendation for it. So I figured, well, he spent a long time surviving, taking care of the people and so on. And yeah, so that's his two defining moments. After that, you know, he progressed over well and then got on the Voyager. And that's roughly it. Yes?
Yep. You and Captain... Karthus?
Oh, yeah.
Karthus, were both at Wolf 359, which ties your characters together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's Ralph and MacArthur.
All right, so mine is Captain Karthus. He is a Klingon Romulan. His father has been Starfleet for most of his life. He was the Klingon, and on a spacefaring mission close to Romulan space, there was a ship of refugees. One of them was his mother, who stayed on the ship. They fell in love, all that. And since childhood, he's been a, kind of a member of Starfleet, but he's been training for that.
He grew up on starships.
The whole time. Never really settled on a planet. So just immediately went to the academy when he was able. Just immediately fell into the command strip and kind of grew into his own when it came to Wolf 359. Where his superior officer was making questionable calls, and he was forced to take over. Not only called him out, but then was forced to take command of the ship. That's...
I think on the Voyager you were assigned as a con officer, right?
No, as security.
Oh, you were security.
Yeah, he was security, and then...
Then Janeway died.
Yeah. Lost/ went missing, whatever. We didn't.
We'll cover Caretaker in a moment. What's wrong with your characters?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he
once
was
again,
forced to
take command.
Forced to take command once again, despite not being a science officer on a science vessel, so. Yeah, I think that's it.
Alright, my character is Ivic Durrell. He is Cardassian and grew up on Bajor during the occupation with his, Cardassian family and everything, of course.
Right.
He grew up on Cardassia, was part of a Cardassian structures. He wasn't part of Central Command, but because he's a doctor. But, he fixed up shoulders, fixed up the Bajoran workers, stuff like that. His two, main career events, which are within this system, he was at one point stationed on a space station, and there was a person who, basically a group of Bajorans had escaped. They're part of the resistance, and he was the person who knew where they went. He basically betrayed his ideals of being a doctor for his superior, who didn't want the Bajorans to be found, and kind of killed that person who knew where they were. That's not on record. People don't know about that, other than the person who his superior was. But that was basically near the end of the occupation, and the superior was someone who had been helping out the resistance. My character wasn't, but after that, basically the occupation was over anyways. After that, my character joined the Cardassian Dissident Movement, which basically believes that Central Command, the military, has been given too much power and they're ruining everything. So they believe that we should go back to the old ways where there was a political, civilian people ruling Cardassia. And also joined the Maquis, believing that, the two forces can join together and work towards their mutual goals. During that, his wife was still stationed on the space station, because I was the superior officer from before. And very quickly into the Maquis being founded, she was found out, which is super suspicious that it took so short of a time for that to be found out. My character wasn't aware of this at the time, but Chakotay actually mounted a rescue mission, rescued his wife and son. On the way back, though, they were shot down. And the second career event is that is death of a friend when my son died. They managed to get him back to me in time, but I wasn't able to save him. So I'm tied into Commander Chakotay because of that, because he saved my wife and basically made it so that I was able to say goodbye to my son. Now, because of the whole Maquis being stranded with the Voyager thing, he's the chief medical officer on Starship Voyager.
Fun fact, I looked up who was lost. Over a dozen crew members were lost during Caretaker, including, and it specifies this specifically, the entire medical staff. Literally every doctor and medical crew member on Voyager was killed.
Yeah, that's why there was a non-person being in charge.
It says everyone who was medical, gone.
Yep.
Wiped out.
Like, were they all sitting there with TNT in their hands
they might have been a part of the ship that was, you know, destroyed when the caretaker ray hit.
Well,
tending to the people.
Maybe just the medical room was blown up or something.
Yeah. Plus the transporter chief, engineering, you lost a lot of folk, the first officer, what's his name? Who's its? Okay, with those characters out of the... or not out of the way, but like identified. I guess we talked about Voyager. We talked about the show premise. Should I talk about Caretaker?
Yeah, I suppose.
Okay, so Caretaker listeners, if you like to watch Caretaker, I don't know why you would. I don't know who would.
Banjo fans.
The fucking Banjo Man fans. The events of Caretaker basically played out as it is on the show, with the distinction that when the Caretaker ray blew up, I think. We're saying Tuvok and Janeway were on board with the Caretaker.
Yeah.
And Harry.
Oh no, Harry died of...
Something else.
A lovely broken heart.
Okay.
Harry died when you guys transferred over, or when B'Elanna and him were in the Caretaker.
That drill going into his chest went a little bit too deep.
Yeah. Yeah, like he was sick from the Caretaker sperm, which is what he was doing, the Caretaker was doing to them. I mean, they just gloss over that. Because he was looking for a mate, and they were all infected by his caretaker STDs.
I didn't...
Yeah, you didn't think about it, right?
I thought
the implication.
He was dissembling their DNA to see if they were compatible.
Why were they covered in caretaker STDs then and dying? Yeah, right? The implication.
Who needs to sample and just inject and see what pops out?
Yeah, right? Anyway, Harry Kim is a dead man. For real. He's not just going to pop on back in.
He's not dead on the inside.
Yeah, right?
He's dead on the inside and the outside.
Well,
yeah, Caretaker basically happened. Don't think about it too hard. As for Voyager itself, because we're not constrained by the budget of a show nobody wanted to watch, even though it was the flagship show of the network at the time and had the best prime time slots... I'm taking super liberal control of what races and stuff and what events happen in the show from here on out. For example, the Kazon were awful and boring and cost-effective aliens, and I've replaced them entirely with, I had the word for it. With the Vorcha from Mass Effect. Yeah, Google that. Those the little green goblin-y guys who also live, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years, just like Ocampa. Huh. I wonder. Is that related? Can say. But yeah, no, so we're gonna be doing that. Like, I'm gonna use Stargate and Farscape and I don't know, maybe Star Wars Expanded Universe and Mass Effect races all over the place. I don't care. No one cares. We don't have a budget and we can do something better than someone with a bunch of shit on their forehead. Yeah, that's it. That's basically the distinction there. The other thing to keep an eye out for listeners is every season of Voyager we do is going to have a myth arc. So we're doing our best to use the episode as inspiration for a good episode. We've already recorded the first one already, and it's Parallax, and Parallax is awful. And that the episode we recorded is a little shaky because we're still learning the system and all the rules and the pacing and getting into character. But as we go on, it'll get better because we'll get better at adapting the episodes into something good. But there are myth arcs. So the myth arc for season one is already thought out and happening. The myth arc for season two, you already know it. It's the Kazon threat and Seska. You've watched Voyager. Seska's the villain. Watch out. And season three is figured out as well, also.
Let's actually think about that. Seska would never be one of those people that would go down to a planet undercover and have to get, like, facial reconstruction or whatever, because the doctor would be able to tell.
Yeah, right? Right? So that's the changes we've made. We're going to have a myth arc that's basically wholly constructed. The other thing is the Q episodes we've completely jettisoned, and I've replaced with a very special type of episode that we've whole cloth made that you'll have some fun with. I guess some ground rules for the show that you're going to be listening to, okay? So before we play a session that is an episode, we watch the episode on Netflix. And then we watch Chuck's SF Debris review of the episode on SF Debris, which will probably be linked to these podcasts. That helps us build a nice little backbone, and from there we basically talk about the episode and build a better plot for the episode based on the premise. Some of this means jettisoning the episode entirely and focusing on the most interesting point they missed out on. The example with the with Waterworld was Waterworld is kind of unnecessary. Tom Paris committing an act of terrorism and what you do with him seems more interesting for an episode.
Yeah, that's the main. That should be the main point of the episode.
Right?
Ethics.
Ethics. Talking. Arguing. Though, you gotta kind of add some more meat to it, because obviously you can't just be us talking and never rolling dice, because the dice represent chance and stakes and things not going 100% our way. So, there's that. The other thing is, we're playing a game, and we want to come back every week, presumably. Unlike Star Trek Voyager's audience, who didn't come back every week.
I mean, it had like 7 seasons.
So do soap operas. So, the premise is, we want to come back every week. The characters obviously want to leave the Delta Quadrant. Voyager has a fantastic amount of bait episodes, where they try to tease that they'll get home this episode. We obviously know they won't. You listeners obviously know that we're not going to send Voyager home. So the episode is set up to have bait in it if the bait existed, but like we're never going to get the bait. It's not going to happen. We're going to avoid it. There's going to be sure reasoning in the episode, but don't worry about a will or they won't they, because that goes against the entire show's premise. We will telegraph if Voyager's going home. There'll be build-up, which the last episode didn't have. Literally, there's no build-up to the end of the show just ends. DS9 takes 6 episodes to end, basically. And they do build-up, and you kind of get the hint that the show's ending. Voyager just done. 1 episode, they're bombing Talaxians out of asteroids or something. The next episode, over.
They're home?
They're done.
No build-up.
Yeah, no build-up. The episode opens with them having been home for 30 years. And then time travel happens.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
It's so bad. It's so good. But that covers that. We're throwing a lot of Star Trek ideas at the wall, seeing what sticks. We have characters. Everyone built secondary characters, which we're not going to talk about because everyone built like 2 or 3, so there's no point in going over 12 to 15 other characters.
They'll come up when needed.
Yeah, they're secondary characters because Star Trek Adventures runs on a troop-style play, which means if one character's the main focus in an episode, then everyone gets to play characters around them that aren't the main characters if the main characters couldn't make it. So if Tom Paris is on a desert island with, you know, a bunch of people that aren't the main characters, you guys get to be those secondary characters.
I mean, I think they'll come into play during our second episode. It seems like that's what we've...
Yes,
at least.
Time and again has already been pre-planned, and only a few people are playing their main character. I think only you.
I think, I'll be the only one on the main adventure, at least. There might be the B-plot.
Yeah, there could be B-plot scenes on the Voyager.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We're not calling it the Voyager. I just keep doing that by mistake, by the way, listeners. It's just Voyager. But yeah, we've already planned out that, yeah, the very second episode is Peter is playing his Klingon, who's the main character. Everyone else is playing a secondary character, and it's this whole little action, time limit, ticking clock, explosion adventure.
Yep.
Other thing we changed, listeners, is Tom Paris is literally Nick Locarno from the episode where Wesley Crusher kills one of his classmates in a flying accident, and they cover it up. If you care about Star Trek history, look up the Nick Locarno-Tom Paris controversy. What happened was Nick Locarno was a character played by Robert Duncan McNeil, the actor for Tom Paris. And they liked him, and he had good acting, and they wanted to use the entire character for Tom Paris' character in Voyager. He was an original character created for the show that people owned the creative rights to, and as per the rules of creating something, you get to get paid when they use their idea. And because the show creators were cheap and thieves and don't have morals, they decided to create a wholly new original character called Tom Paris, who shared 100% of Nick Locarno's characteristics, backstories, and emotions.
An actor.
And even like the color shirt he was going to go into. Minus percentage where they sat down with a lawyer to make him just different enough that they would not have to pay royalties. It was a real dick move, and it's theft. Someone's like, oh, I don't know if that guy deserved to get paid every episode for Nick Locarno. It's like, yeah, he did, because he created the character, and that's how the laws around copyright and royalties work. But the creators of Star Trek are thieves. They always have been. Gene Roddenberry wrote lyrics to the Star Trek opening theme, specifically so the guy who wrote the opening theme would have to split the royalties with Gene. Like you never hear lyrics for Star Trek's opening theme, right? Gene wrote lyrics that never got used in the show to steal money from that guy for doing nothing. The show creators for Voyager did nothing and stole Nick Locarno's character and the money for it. So, they're thieves. Go fuck yourself. Oh, right. Swearing. We're going to try not to swear as much in the show because Star Trek doesn't have swearing.
Expect... It feels really off when you have Star Trek swearing.
Yeah, so expect us to break that rule an awful lot for the first couple of episodes.
But try really hard not to.
Yeah, I know. Harry Kim was killed off because he was pointless. Harry Kim was a character that was envisioned to be a really interesting kind of fresh perspective because he was fresh out of the Academy and play off Tom Paris. And then they didn't really have a lot for him to do, and they were going to kick... He was going to leave the show when Scorpion happened and Seven of Nine came in, so they didn't have to pay for an extra person. So he agreed to leave. Then he became one of the most beautiful people from People Magazine, so he had to stay. Apparently the network execs forced the show creators' hands. And that's why Kes leaves, even though they wanted to keep Kes and Seven on board, and they had a lot of character development set up for them. They didn't get rid of Neelix. They got rid of Kes. And out of spite, the show creators never gave Garrett Wong, the guy who played Ensign Kim, anything afterwards. They never gave him any spotlights. This is so egregious and insulting that Harry Kim never gets promoted once on Voyager. You might understand how egregious this is, but I'll just give you a brief breakdown. Harry Kim is an ensign. When you go to Starfleet Academy, you leave as one of two things, an ensign or a lieutenant commander junior grade if you stay a few extra years. They practically give junior grade away.
It's generally science officers that stay for longer.
They give it away like candy. They have dozens of lieutenant commander junior grades. So Harry Kim was on the bridge, and being on the bridge, you actually have to take a special exam called the Bridge Officer's Exam. This, if you're a TNG fan, you'll remember came up for Deanna and Beverly. They both took the Bridge Officer's Exam. This is an exam for a senior officer where they learn that how to be a bridge officer. And one of the exam tests is letting one of your crewmates fucking die and blow up in an explosion to learn that sometimes a commander has to let someone die. So Harry Kim specifically is on the command track. He is the operations manager. Operations manager is a bridge position, which means Harry Kim is an ensign who's a senior officer. You know when they go into the ready room and it's called the magic meeting room? That's a meeting for only senior officers. You'll note that everyone who runs the ship is in there, including Harry Kim. As operations manager, he's the senior operations officer on the entire ship. In traditional naval lingo, and even in Star Trek lingo, like Starfleet lingo, the operations manager on the bridge is the third most important role in the ship, below captain and first officer. This position is so important that Data from The Next Generation was Harry Kim's position. And he was, I think, a lieutenant commander and the second officer. He was next in line to take over if Riker and Picard were in trouble. So there's no good reason he never got the junior grade upgrade. And people who don't think things through were all like, oh, well, there's only so many positions on a starship. They even say that in an episode of Voyager. And it's like, yeah, but they're able to demote and re-promote Tom Paris couple times on two different versions of Voyager, and they were pretty loose with the junior grade position and the lieutenant commander position and the commander position.
There's like 10 to 15 lieutenant commanders on Voyager alone. You can afford to have one more lieutenant junior grade.
People are like, oh, it would fuck up the chain of command, except he's in charge of all of operations.
Right?
He reports directly to the captain. He is literally the third most important officer on the entire ship.
I mean, doesn't even the EMH, you know,
even the EMH outranks him. And not the EMH in Voyager, you know, the one who's alive and sapient. Every EMH outranks him. every EMH is inbuilt with that rank in their protocols for
what
medicals.
Rank?
I think they count as Lieutenant Commander or Commander.
That bitch does not outrank my character.
He actually does, but you have a higher position.
Put some magnets close to that.
Put some magnets. You're so bad at science.
Magnets, how do they work?
So, to circle back on Harry Kim, that is how little respect they gave the character. He served on Voyager. He died 15 times. He died almost as much as Daniel Jackson on Stargate did and came back. He went to dangerous scenarios. He got all his flesh melted off when the species 8472 bit him with their vampire bite. He had a bunch of horrible shit happen to him over and over again. And they never give him that one little promotion that you can get by just staying in school for an extra year and picking up an art history course. Do you want to know the very last, shredded, super absolute hold-on example that someone had clung to for Harry Kim not getting his promotion?
Mm-hmm.
The very last one, and this was sad, it was the reason Harry Kim is operations manager is because operations manager must be coded for ensign, which is disproven by a couple people who've had the position in Star Trek history, right?
Data?
Well, Data's a special exception, of course, for this to work. But then so is every other example ever brought up after Data. So after that was brought up, Harry Kim did not get a promotion because operations manager, the third most important role on a starship, a bridge officer, a senior officer position, on Intrepid class starships only, must be ensign only positions. That was the excuse I got. That was the argument I got.
Which is
kind of drunk.
Now, I would like to point out there is a second Intrepid class starship out there, at least. The USS Bellerophon. I'm pretty sure their operations manager position is not restricted to ensign only, the third most powerful position on their bridge.
Okay, well, I think we'll get the off topic a bit.
No, we're on topic. This is on topic. So, I like Harry Kim. I think Garrett Wong did an excellent job. You can actually find him on Twitch. He talks about Trek all the time, and he's a fun dude, and I liked Harry's acting and stuff. He's great in The Thaw. It's my favorite episode of Star Trek ever.
That was really great, yeah.
But he is absolutely pointless in Trek due to how they treated him. So we had to cut him. And we cut Tuvok because he only had, two or three things that really related to him. Him and the Maquis bonding, Tuvix, which, oh my god, listeners. When we get to Tuvix, because Tuvix will happen. And some Maquis stuff that happens later, and just little bits here and there. He was more of Janeway's best friend.
Yeah. And really, Peter's character, who I don't remember its name right now, he's taking over the actual positions in the ship for him, so.
Yeah,
so, and Janeway obviously had to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, as for characters, you play Neelix a little bit different than he's in the show?
I did play Neelix a little different from how he was in the show. I played him like how his TV guide described him as. He was supposed to be like a greasy car salesman, quirk type character that was clever and conniving. But also the actor for Neelix, who I can't remember off the top of my head, is just a joy.
Ethan Phillips.
Ethan Phillips kind of like a joy. So, it's hard to imagine him being like a conniving, cold-hearted, murder you quirk type character. So I try to play him as...
When they said he's supposed to be like Quark, I think they meant he was supposed to be a breakout character like Quark, not a breakout character who is similar in personality to Quark.
That's a really bad prediction, 1995 May edition of TV Guide.
I think they're like, yeah, he's like a new character. He'll bring a new element to the Star Trek.
Like, oh no, so when he'll get his lungs ripped out, it'll be such a touching moment for everybody.
Yeah, he was also supposed to be like Odo and provide like a commentary on the human experience. Which, if you watch early Voyager, he does do that. He goes to Kes like, these Starfleet are so crazy, doing all these logical things to survive. Idiot. So Neelix is a little more intelligent. I try to play the Doctor as Krabby if he comes up. You gotta give me more excuses to turn that EMH on to be a little assistant. Oh,
yes.
And we moved Neelix's stupid kitchen to the hydroponics bay where Cass set up her hydroponics lab. I would like to point out, in the same episode that we just did Parallax, one of the best plot holes in Trek ever happens. It's not really a plot hole. And it comes up in SF debris. He even mentions it. Kes goes into the fucking meeting and he's like, I want to set up a hydroponic bay. He's like, go to Madison and see if you can get some supplies for it. So she goes into Madison and she's like, hey, robot doctor, I need for my hydroponics bay some soil samples. Soil being the thing hydroponics eliminates.
Yep.
But, you know, they gave her something to do.
Gave her a reason to interact with the doctor, which is really the important part there.
Yeah, that was the point of the episode. Instead of going, doctor, can I have a bucket of, I don't know, mineral juice water?
Can't just crib all his notes.
Fucking lord. Yeah. Harry Kim got a real raw deal. That's my take on that. Jamie had to go because she was a brutal dictator tyrant queen. So
yeah.
She's gone.
We couldn't, like, stand playing with her for too long.
Dude, if I got to play fucking Janeway, oh my god.
I would have a hard time not liking Janeway. Like, she's great.
She's basically the Majestic.
No,
she's basically the Killer Queen if the Killer Queen cared a little less.
Yeah.
She's just amazing, and Kate Mulgrew, and...
Kate Mulgrew's a gem. All of them are a gem.
Yeah.
We decided to keep Chakotay because Chakotay is a pretty okay first officer as a sounding board for, like, an NPC for me to play.
Also, having him be there is pretty important for the Maquis.
Yeah, it brings the Maquis together. I know one else was playing a really high-ranking Maquis except for Nicole's doctor, who's not a bridge officer.
And also is Cardassian, so it adds an extra layer of, like,
yeah,
But
Chakotay is so wooden and has no spark of life behind him that I can play him as an NPC and he won't threaten your guys' authority ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to have some sounding board there.
Yeah. It's like, what are you going to do, worry about him revolting or rebelling?
Yes, let's bring it on.
It's like, what's he done? He's like, he's giving a speech about rebelling. How long's been going on? An hour. They all died. He started to talk about life and anthropology.
Pulled out a wheel.
Fuck. This is the wheel of rebellion. Anyway, I can't think of anything else to talk about.
I think that covers everything.
Yeah, I think that's a good intro. Yeah. We don't want to over-discuss things and spoil.
There's no point in discussing the mechanics of the game. They'll come up as needed.
We're doing our best to learn them as fast as we can. It's a little, yeah, it's a very much story gamey, a lot of meta and narrative control stuff, which is what you need to run a Star Trek game. It can't be a simulation game where the rules simulate reality and stuff, and it's all very hard and granular. You can't do that.
Yeah.
The resolution engine's very fast, though. I like that.
That's good.
The crew is very non-human for the bridge crew.
Yeah, all of our characters are not even looking at all human.
He's good.
A bunch of us aren't even from Federation worlds. Ian's character is the only one from a Federation world.
Yeah. Wow.
Denobulus.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not from Denobulus, but...
Nah.
Well, you're Denobulian, at least.
Yeah.
Like, you're from that. Whereas... like, Klingons are allies of the Federation, but they're not Federation.
Oh, shit,
yeah.
Klingon, Romulan, and a Klingon.
Yeah,
and then a Cardassian. Like,
oh my god, the three, like, highest position people aren't even Federation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
God
damn it.
I mean, Chakotay, for some reason,
he's Maquis.
But he's Federation. Like,
he actually went through the academy and actually went through, like, all the proper training.
He has command experience, so he had been, like, a captain before.
He'd been a commander. I think Jamie just gave him back his old rank of commander.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Basically, we just went through the character creation. I guess each one of us found the races most interesting to us. We didn't just focus, oh, let's make humans because humans are kind of bland in the system.
Yeah. I also just...
You see humans
because
they're
cheap. I've
been
watching a lot of DS9, and I also like how Cardassians look, and... was found it interesting to play, like, kind of a character has different morals than I do. I was going to try to explore that a little bit, which is hard.
Mm-hmm. So, I think the last thing I will touch on before we break and end this episode is the name. The name is Star Trek Adventures Intergalactic. So, let me give you some background, listeners. This is one of my favorite stories. In Star Trek, open bracket, 2009, close bracket, young piece of shit Jim Kirk steals a classic car and drives off a cliff because J.J. Abrams wanted to run a Star Wars movie. While he's driving that car off the cliff and his abusive stepdad is screaming at him over the radio, he turns on the radio and turns on the Beastie Boys song, Sabotage, a song that was titled to make fun of William Shatner of Star Trek fame and how he can't say the word sabotage. That seems kind of weird. Whatever. Cute reference. What you might not realize is that they have another song, my favorite Beastie Boys song, Intergalactic. And in the song Intergalactic, they have lyrics. I'll read you the last three relevant lines. I'll stir fry you in my wok, your knees will start to shake, and your fingers pop like a pinch on the neck of Mr. Spock. Which tells us, listeners, and they reference this again in Star Trek Beyond, they play Sabotage as they surf an explosion in space on an NX-class starship to destroy the bad guy. They surf an explosion in space. It's amazing. This means that in the Star Trek Abrams universe, at some point, the Beastie Boys are revealed the nature of Mr. Spock and his Vulcan nerve pinch enough to put in the song Intergalactic, and are also aware of the nature of how Jim Kirk cannot say the word sabotage correctly.
Gonna say, Kirk did a lot of time traveling.
There's an episode where he just starts in the past for fun to hang out with a Time Lord.
Yeah, he just knows how to time travel and just does it sometimes.
They go back in time to save a bunch of whales.
They probably went to, like, go to a Beastie Boys concert at one point.
Classical music. That'd be an episode that happens in the original series. They go back in time to go to, like, a beautiful arts recital or, like, to meet great classics. And they talk about the Beastie Boys being classical music. It's the equivalent of them going to see the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
Like Spock's like, I'm going to embrace my human side this episode, and we're going to go in and see some real Earth art like that'll, like, inspire me because of the great masters that came before. It's a fucking Beastie Boys concert. And then they get drunk and go, and Kirk goes backstage so he can shake their hands. And Spock gets into a fist fight and has to finger, like knock someone out. And they learn about aliens. And they write Sabotage.
Yep.
To make fun of Kirk because he's slurring because he has a split lip from a beer bottle hitting him. Which is why we called our show Intergalactic, because J.J. Abrams made Beastie Boy, made the episode, the inevitable episode, Kirk and Spock meet the Beastie Boys canon.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love that song. I use it in D&D when, like, great monsters attack. It's great. It's great. All right, that's it. We're good. We've done the intro. We are out of here. So, I was Devin, the whatever, Nicole.
Yes, Nicole.
There we go.
Kevin.
Peter.
Ian.
And this is sponsored by Nobody. Signing off.